Welcome to DAC Beechcroft's Lawcast. My name is Jade Kowalski and I co-lead the DACB Data Privacy and Cyber Practice. Collectively, we cover all aspects of contentious and non-contentious data privacy and cyber law and regulation. I'm pleased to introduce our new Data Privacy and Cyber Digest, a regular series of short podcasts that will consider topical issues and developments.
Thanks, Jade. So I'm Pete, and I'm here with my fellow partner, Chris. Hi, Chris. We're both lawyers specialising in all things technology, data protection, and privacy law. So, Chris, what are you thinking about this inaugural episode of the Data Privacy and Cyber Digest?
Well, I'm really excited, Pete. It's a great time to really delve into some of these topics. Often, privacy related matters are quite murky, so we're excited about bringing some clarity to them. Obviously, this is the first one we're doing, so today we're going to kick off with a topic that perhaps has remained under the radar somewhat in recent months, but it's really good to be speaking about it today. And that is the European Data Protection Board's opinion, which was issued a few weeks ago, on obligations following reliance on processes and subprocessors. Now, it's a bit of a mouthful, but essentially, it's really about accountability for controllers who appoint processes and then who subsequently appoint subprocessors. And it's a really interesting area around accountability and liability along supply chains. It's something that has been subject to a few developments in the last few months. So it's a great time to be kicking off the first in this series looking at this topic.
Great. So it sounds like there's going to be quite a lot for us to unpack in this session. And I suppose maybe it's worth just giving a quick plug that this is episode one of two, or mini episode one of two, in a two-part mini series. So I think the next time we're going to be looking at processor liability in the context of the ICO's decision to, or provisional decision to, issue a fine to the processor Advanced, issued a few months ago. But perhaps if we sort of turn back to the EDPB opinion, Chris. Perhaps we start with sort of the context for the opinion and how it was brought about, and broadly what it covers at a high level.
Sure. So the opinion from the EDPB was issued in response to a request that had been raised by the Danish Supervisory Authority. And they'd asked the EDPB for clarification around certain aspects of a controller's responsibility under the GDPR when it was appointing processors and subprocessors. Now, before we delve into the opinion in more detail, essentially the overall emphasis from the EDPP is an overarching principle that the controllers remain ultimately responsible and accountable for compliance, not just their own, but across their supply chain in terms of process and subprocess who are appointed under them. And that's regardless of how many are appointed, how long the supply chain is. And it's a really interesting point to review at a time when perhaps, as you were indicating, Pete, that the liability of processors is a topic that's becoming increasingly subject to greater scrutiny. But we'll pause there and leave that topic for the next session. I don't want to go too far.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, fine. So it sounds like if you're the controller, you're not going to be in a position to pass the buck down the line if something goes wrong. Perhaps we could look in a little bit more detail at some of the key points that arise out of the opinion.
Sure. So I'll start with the first one, which is around a list of subprocessors that has to be maintained. Now, the EDPB stresses that the contracts between the controllers and processors need to include an updated list of approved subprocessors. And this really emphasizes the controller's obligation to have visibility and control over its supply chain. But it does raise an interesting topic, because if you are a controller who has lots of processor contracts and then, you know, complex and long supply chains under each of those, then how is this really managed in reality? And what we've seen to date is a lot of processors providing these lists via hyperlinks or offering to update a list on their website. But it's quite a passive approach that assumes that the controller will be happy with changes to subprocessors unless they object. But this seems to suggest a more proactive approach is required to have the controllers really aware of who the subprocessors are at any point, which suggests a greater degree of oversight is required. So, interesting to see how this really feeds down to the changes that might be required in the contracts that we typically review. Okay, so this then takes us on to the next point that is emphasized in the opinion, which is about not just requiring the controller to have a list, but actually knowing exactly who the sub-processes are. And traditionally, there's been a little bit of uncertainty in terms of the degree to which a controller needs to know the precise identity of its sub-processes, because I think it's fair to say, historically, it was interpreted to perhaps be a slightly lower obligation in that the controller only needed to know about what kind of category of sub-processor or recipient of the data was involved, whereas now it's clear they need to know who they exactly are, their identity. And that follows the opinion that the EDPB is outlining here, emphasizing articles 13, 14, and 15 of the GDPR. So 13, 14 is about setting out in your privacy policy who recipients of the data are. 15 is about in response to a data subject access request, if someone asks who else is accessing my data. So the controller now really needs to have a specific list of who those ultimate sub-processors and sub-processors, et cetera, are. And it has to have those available at all times as well. So that suggests that it can't necessarily just go and ask the processor if the information is required. It needs to have it available immediately, i.e. keep its own list. And then the third point that is raised is around just clarifying that controllers must ensure that the every link, every participant in the supply chain has in place sufficient guarantees to comply with Article 28, which is you know, not just about security, but overall compliance. So again, emphasizing that the controller really remains ultimately responsible for the compliance of each party along the supply chain. And that's quite, I guess, a tough obligation for the controller to really manage in practice, isn't it, Pete?
Yeah, I think that's right, Chris. I think one of the things that I found really interesting about the EDPB's opinion is the way in which they draw on the CJEU's decision in the Austrian Post case and the view of the court there that data subjects, when they exercise their right of access under Article 15, are entitled to the, you know, to the specific identities of those recipients, and using that as the basis for saying that controllers obviously need to have that very detailed oversight of their supply chain, and they need to know exactly who you know, which processors and sub-processors are involved in processing the data for which they're a controller. So I think, Chris, there's a lot there, and a lot of responsibility on controllers. What was your sense in terms of the EDPB's position on taking a risk-based approach? Did you think there was any kind of flexibility that they were allowing?
Well, to a degree. Whilst the EDPB states that the verification of sufficient guarantees is required in all cases, regardless of the level of risk, it does also indicate that how far such verification has to go does depend on the risk level. So you need to do it, but how far you go will depend on factors such as, you know, the degree of importance of the supply chain. You know, is it for a business critical system? Does it involve processing an awful lot of personal data, particularly special category data? Are there other high risk factors like overseas transfers, etc.?
Great. I suppose that makes sense. And what about contracts? Do you think that the EDPB's view is that in order to discharge that duty, controllers need to check all of the contracts in their supply chain, in their processing chain, to make sure they've met the requirements of Article 28.3 or 28.4, specifically in terms of flowing down obligations?
No, thankfully not. The EDPB actually stopped short of requiring controllers to, you know, systematically review every single sub-processor contract down the chain. But it does, however, suggest that they should consider at least looking at some of them, you know, using approaches like a sample review to at least meet their accountability obligations. So obviously that raises questions of, you know, which contracts should the controller be reviewing, and how. You know, typically to date we've seen contracts between controllers and processors in terms of these sort of ongoing oversight arrangements have, you know, the typical audit clauses that you see required under Article 28. But in reality, you know, how often are these audit rights ever exercised? So perhaps it is quite useful to kind of consider whether a more practical approach is required in terms of maybe some kind of ongoing monitoring and reporting obligations done in a fairly streamlined way, particularly looking at ongoing compliance of really key high-risk contracts in the supply chain.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Well, I thought one of the things I picked up when I looked through the opinion was that there is obviously a specific reference to everyone's favourite topic, international transfers. And just when you thought it was safe to go back into the water, everyone's done their sort of Schrems II remediations and SEC repapering. We've got some views of the EDPB in this paper on international transfers. Any particular points you think is worth picking up here?
Yes, definitely. So yeah, this is quite a big point outlined in the opinion of the EDPB. So really what they're emphasising is that controllers are responsible for ensuring compliance with the GDPR in relation to transfers, not just transfers that they make, but ones made down the supply chain. So for instance, they need to map out where the data is being transferred to and whom, and why. You know, ultimately, why does it need to go overseas? Again, the EDPB refers back to Articles 13 to 15 in terms of having that information available either in your privacy policy or in response to a data subject access request, really around transparency. And it also needs to, as a controller, assess the grounds for the transfer in terms of, is there an adequacy decision or are there appropriate safeguards like standard contractual clauses in place? Has a TIA been implemented? And then it really needs to, review that further and understand if the measures taken by the processor or the transferring party are sufficient. Are the measures that they've taken to address any shortfalls in security in the recipient country sufficient? Do additional supplementary measures need put in place? Now, to my mind, this is quite an interesting point because a lot of organisations in the UK have been citing the ICO guidance that says that it's the party affecting the transfer who's really responsible for ensuring the compliance of the transfer. And, from a controller's perspective, they're saying, well, if the processor's the party affecting the transfer, it's really the processor who needs to be responsible for putting in place the EU addendum, so the UK addendum, doing the TIA, and the controller's almost outsourcing responsibility to them. So there's a slight conflict, I suppose, in some ways here between this opinion on this point and perhaps the current position that certainly UK parties are adopting. It does suggest that the controller needs to be more actively involved in overseeing the compliance steps around the transfer itself.
Yeah, I think that's certainly how I read the opinion. I think the EDPB is definitely taking the position that the controller needs to be far more engaged than perhaps you might interpret the ICO's guidance on this point. I mean, obviously the controller is always ultimately accountable, but it feels like the EDPB are taking a much tougher line here in terms of what the controller actually needs to do, perhaps. So I can see this being sort of particularly problematic in terms of controllers asking to see things like the transfer impact assessments that their processors have undertaken when they've exported data. Or prior to exporting data, because I remember doing Schrems remediation projects, in the last kind of couple of years. And, for one client, I remember we did ask processors for their transfer impact assessments to help inform our clients' own assessments. And the response we typically got was the processors were only willing to share a kind of summary version, but not their full assessment. Presumably their reasons for that, like legal privilege or whatever it might be, commercial sensitivity. But that, query how this opinion and those requirements are going to affect the position that processors took in those circumstances. So Chris, what do you think? What's the big takeaway from all of this?
Yeah, I guess the big takeaway is, leaving aside recent discussions we have about revisiting whether processors are perhaps increasingly seen as having greater accountability and liability for their own compliance and compliance down the supply chain beneath them, it does actually seem that this opinion is emphasising that really the buck does stop with the controller and overall responsibility and oversight remains with the controller. And that's, as we said, in terms of approving and having knowledge of who the sub-processors are, verifying compliance down the supply chain, and also bearing overall responsibility for transfers that they take. So yeah, there's a lot of responsibility, it seems, that remains with the controller. And that does raise questions in terms of, you know, how they can meet the cost, how they can resource all this requirement. It seems that really the controllers can no longer just outsource the compliance responsibilities to their sub-processors and processors. Really, the buck does stop with them still.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, and I suppose that's, you know, that as I said before, that, you know, the controller always has the sort of ultimate accountability. But I think, you know, market practice has certainly meant that controllers were more comfortable giving some, fairly reasonably large degree of responsibility to their processors when it came to, you know, various aspects like flowing down contracts, contractual terms to their sub-processors, and potentially complying with the requirements around international transfers. And it feels like the EDPB are taking a very robust view here, perhaps not consistent with where the market's really at the moment in terms of the approach that controllers are taking. So quite a lot there, and I suspect this is going to be particularly problematic for larger organisations with complex processing chains.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how organisations react to this and whether they change their approach. As you said, for large organisations who've got dozens, if not hundreds, of supplier contracts, and then, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of sub-processors, etc., down those, each of those supply chains, actually overseeing all of that is going to be virtually impossible. So perhaps a lot of organizations will take a bit of a risk-based approach in terms of categorizing the more high-risk types of contracts and focusing on those. And I think also it'll be useful to see how organizations can perhaps look at ways in terms of monitoring these in a smart way, like have perhaps more sophisticated reporting mechanisms, dashboards, how they can oversee compliance rather than more traditional means.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's all we've got time for today, so we'll leave it there, I think. Thanks, Chris, for covering that. I thought that was a really good topic to do in our inaugural Data Privacy and Cyber Digest episode. I think next time we're going to look a bit deeper into processor liability, and I think you're shortly about to do another podcast on DORA, the EU's Digital Operational Resilience Act, which also has places some obligations on financial entities in terms of maintaining oversight of their supply chains. I think also perhaps a shameless plug that we will be holding our annual data protection conference in January, on the 28th of January, the Data Protection Day. And one of the topics we're looking to cover there will be around oversight of supply chains. So we'll unpack some of these details in a bit more there. But I'll leave it there. Thanks, Chris.
Great. Thanks for listening. Speak soon.
Thanks. See you soon.